Welcome to Dish the Dirt, a light-hearted and fun podcast about Australian flower growers, their stories, knowledge and insights into the industry. I'm your host Rebecca, and each week I speak to a different farmer and get them to dish the dirt. Dish the Dirt acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we work and live, and recognise their continuing connection to land, water and community. We pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Hello and welcome to episode 7 of season 6 of Dish the Dirt. Thank you for joining me this week for our last episode of 2022. It has been so wonderful to have you all along and so many things have happened this year. I wanted to say a few thank yous before I get into this week's episode. So thank you to Meg and Joe from Monvale Flower Farm for the industry day at the beginning of this year. It was such a special day for so many reasons, and thank you so much for opening up your farm to myself and to also all the other flower farmers and florists that came along on that day. I wanted to thank everyone for getting involved in the calendar at the end of this year. It was so wonderful to get all of your photos, and I'm sorry if you didn't make it into the calendar this year. There is always next year. So if you would like to buy one of those calendars, you can do so. And all of the calendars ordered so far are out in the mail, so they should be hitting your post boxes very, very shortly. You can order them through the link in my Instagram bio. I want to say a huge thank you to all of the flower farmers who are part of this podcast every single week. Without you, we wouldn't have the amazing industry that we'd have, and we also would not have this podcast. So without you, I do not have the privilege of even putting this together. So thank you so much. Thank you to all the listeners, all the people that share, all the people that continue to send me beautiful messages. Again, without you, there wouldn't be this conversation that is so important, and it's so wonderful to be able to get these voices out there and these stories out there and to be able to be sharing this every week with you. So thank you so much. All right, let's get into this week's episode with Christy from Soho Roses. This week I get to speak to the wonderful Christy from Soho Roses. It was such a privilege to be able to speak to Christy, and this recording actually went for I think about 2 hours. We had such a good chat about everything floristry and flower farming related, so I've cut it down to be these few minutes that you get to listen to, but yeah, it was wonderful. Thank you so much, Christy. Christy's flower farm, Soho Roses, is in Deane, Victoria, and Christy started with a florist background, and then she will tell you the story about how she then became Soho Rose Farm. But they now farm on their family farm with 13,000 roses and other varieties such as lupins, dahlias and sweet pea. They also have Windflower Store in Ballarat, which Christy will tell you the story behind also. Again, such a wonderful, insightful episode, and I am so grateful to have had you on the podcast, Christy. So let's get into it. All right. So just to begin, do you want to tell us where you're situated?
Yeah. So I'm in Deane, Victoria, which is between Ballarat and Daylesford.
Yeah, lovely. And how did you get there?
How did I get to the farm?
Yeah. What brought you to Deane?
Well, I married a potato farmer. So yeah. He was never moving to Melbourne, so I was always moving to the farm.
yeah, awesome. Do you want to share a little bit about your background and how you sort of came to be Soho Roses?
Yeah, so before I was a florist, and I worked in Melbourne doing weddings and events floristry. Mm-hmm. And loved it. Like I love building big things, and I love the whole process of, you know, sort of dreaming up the wedding and making it, and and then starting that all over again.
Mm.
It was really time for me to move to the farm. Like, I had been commuting for a while, backwards and forwards. And then I was pregnant with Lincoln, my youngest, and my eldest was about to go, well, was at school, and my second was about to go to school.
Mm.
And so I decided that I would sort of finish up floristry, and I had been growing some flowers in one of our side paddocks for my old work for a while, and really liked it. And I guess because Brock is a farmer, it felt like, and you know, our life is on the farm. It felt like a natural progression that maybe I would sort of start doing something like that. But I didn't really have any kind of plan about what I was going to do. And then one day Mel, my old boss, and I were talking, and Soho was for sale at that time. Claire and Molly, the previous Soho owners, wanted to sell their business and their property, but they could only sell their property and not their business. Mel and I were sort of talking about maybe I could just buy some of their plants and plant them in one of the side paddocks here. And maybe when Lincoln went to school, I would start doing something like that. And I ended up going and talking to Claire and Molly and went down to visit their farm. And when we left there, we had decided to buy the business. So things went pretty fast, but when I went there, like, it was just so beautiful, and like,
yeah,
you know, the roses were flowering, and the other alternative was that the roses would just be bulldozed by their settlement date of their property, so I couldn't.
Yeah, they would have been sad.
Yeah. And I had, you know, as a florist, had used their roses for so many years. So I guess I also had that sort of emotional connection to them in a way too. So, yeah, I just took a really big risk.
Yeah. And had you grown roses previously? Had you had any experience with roses, or you just sort of know you're kind of one of those green thumb people?
I wouldn't say that I'm a green thumb at all.
Okay.
I'm definitely a florist, and I love flowers, but my gardening experience was pretty limited to like what we have here, and pruning like Brock's grandma's roses, and like what I'd learned from my grandma as a kid, which I've always been really interested in gardening, and like, you know, I can still remember where every plant in my grandma's backyard was when I was a kid.
Oh, growing. Wow.
But, you know, and I loved nature and botanical things, but I think, you know, flower farming and gardening are two very different things too. So
yeah,
when we decided to move Soho here, I actually didn't even know the names of all of the roses. Like,
okay,
when we ordered them, we used to just order like pale pink or, you know, a bucket of white, hybrid teas. I had no idea all the different names.
Yeah. I don't think I would either.
No.
I've got more of an idea now, I think, after buying roses from you and, I don't know, maybe, you know, getting more involved in rose farming. I kind of have more of an idea of names, which I'm sure you do now too. But,
yeah
you do just go a bucket of pink or whatever normally.
I think Instagram's been really good for that. Like, sharing things and naming things has definitely helped people or educated people more on the different varieties. But when we decided to take on Soho, I worked down there for a little while with Claire and
taught
me how to pick and, you know, all the things that they did down there. And she'd send me home with these amazing buckets of like their leftovers, and she'd be like, you know, what did you think of the, I don't know, Abraham Darby? And I'd be like, oh, my God, which one is Abraham Darby? But it was so incredible, and it still blows me away that, like, I didn't know any of their names, and that was the season before they moved here. And by the time I had planned all the paddocks and researched everything, and I really went, like, in the deep end, like, I did a crash course on rose farming. And by the time I moved here, I knew which every single one, what they looked like without leaves on them, what they look like without the flowers on them. Like, I just knew.
Oh, wow.
Everything. I know. And it just, I remembered it all. Like, by the time they were flowering, I just knew. And it, yeah, it still amazes me that it all just kind of clicked into place so well. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe in a past life you were. You were a rose farmer.
Maybe. I mean, I obviously survived that, so we'll see.
Yeah. So skipping forward to you're moving the plants, how did you do that?
Yeah, that was a pretty big task, one that we probably didn't really think through too intensely when we decided to move the farm. That was like a lot of problem solving after. But we ended up tracking down a rose digger from a local rose nursery here that had closed down. And so that was a fair few, just trying to figure out who had access to behind the fence that we wanted to get it from. We dug them out with the rose digger and then planted them here at our farm. But, you know, roses can't, the roots of the roses can't dry out. So we moved everything in mulch in boxes into a back onto the back of a semi-trailer, and every day we would just bring a semi-trailer load back. And then we would plant, we'd spray them out with water and then plant them within 24 hours. So
yeah, wow,
we were really lucky that the weather was really bad. Like, it just drizzled and rained the whole time, so it wasn't, I say lucky, it was good for the plants, it was not
yeah
good.
Yeah. Doing the job.
But because it wasn't too hot, nothing dried out, and we had a really good success rate. Like, I think we moved 8,000 plants and we would have only lost 50 of them.
Wow. So 8,000 plants. That is a lot, isn't it?
It is a lot.
So many. Yeah. How many do you have now?
We have 13,000 now.
Okay. Wow. That's so many. So after you took over Soho and you decided to move it and you've got them in the ground, what happened then? Did you start selling to florists, or did you just start selling to Mel, who you were working for previously? How did you go about it?
I had pretty low expectations for the first season. So we moved them in the May, and then it is a little bit colder here in where we are, so everything flowers here, you know, sort of like a month behind Melbourne. And so they put on heaps of growth, they looked good, but they weren't, like, you could tell that they had been transplanted. And so I sort of thought, like, we'll just take that first season pretty steady and just find our feet and get our bearings. And I had put on staff to help out, sort of, I'd sort of replicated what Claire and Wally had done, basically, because we essentially bought the business. That meant that we sort of, we also got those connections. We still set up our business as Dakota, as our wholesaler in the market. So we had all of that. And yeah, I just sort of thought we'll just play it by ear and see how it goes. And by the end of November, they just flowered unbelievably. Like, they just didn't stop flowering. So there was no small lead up to kind of figuring it all out. We just went straight into full production.
Yeah, amazing. And so what's happened since then? Do you want to run us through, you know, we had COVID and sort of you know, like, how you've sort of evolved since that first season?
Yeah, so the first season was really great, like, lots of learning curves, and I guess I found it not too difficult in terms of, like, the post-production side. I know so well, like, how florists want their flowers when they buy them, and what they're using them for, and all of that type of thing. I knew that side of it really well, so I didn't feel like that was too difficult. I had a lot to learn in terms of farming and getting to know what our like climate here is. And so, you know, and like learning bugs and pests and diseases and all of that kind of thing. But it was a good learning season. Like, I don't think we had anything that was too hard or too traumatic, or, you know, we sort of really coasted along pretty well. And then the next one was pretty good as well, and we had really good weather, and that was the year that COVID happened in the March. And because we sell, you know, 100% pretty much of our flowers to weddings and events florists, we just lost all of our business overnight.
Mm.
So that was really tough. And I think at that stage, like, we were still, like, Soho has been around for so many years, but for us, we were still a really new business. Like,
yeah, of course.
Sort of hadn't had those years of time to sort of work up to diversifying into too much more, or setting up things so that, you know, if one crop goes down, we've got some other things that we can kind of rely on. We hadn't had that time to kind of have those structures. So yeah, when COVID happened and we lost all of our income, that was pretty hard. And being a seasonal farm too, we didn't really have the scope to get JobKeeper or any of those sort of things that were put up in place. So I lost all my staff basically, bar a few, and I sent a few to work on potato farms just to keep them employed. Yeah. But yeah, that was really tough. But we just scaled back and rode it out, and that was it. But we definitely didn't get the boom, I guess, of the COVID lockdowns, and, you know, which was great for some other flower farmers because they were able to kind of capitalize on the retail side of things. But we just didn't really get that. And we pruned that winter and then hoped for the best the next COVID year. But again, it was really, we never got to the stage where we could put on more people to sort of help out, to sell more. And then I started thinking, like, what can we do to make money? And we decided to do a pop-up in Ballarat for Valentine's Day.
Because
I was like, well, I'm a florist, so surely we can use that. Like, what else have we got that we can use? And that was really well received. Like, that was a really unexpected turn. I had no aspirations of ever even really going back to do floristry.
Okay. Yeah.
I just thought, I'm doing the farm now and the farm is it. And I love farming. Like, I love growing the flowers. I love being here. I love doing all of that. But it was sort of a, what can we do to keep, you know, the few staff that we have going?
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, we decided to just keep doing the shop. And it's been great. Like, it's been hard. Retail is really hard, but it has pushed us in a different direction that has challenged me and challenged the business. But now going through all the things that we've gone through, I think it has been really great. For us and for our business. But we had a hailstorm last January, which just wiped out everything pre our summer flush of flowers. So having the shop was really great for us because, again, it just kept us kind of ticking along and it kept our you know, few staff that we have employed. So
yeah. So also, yeah, it must have been tough though, kind of with the store, because I know how expensive buying in flowers is, you know, for a retail store, and having that in mind that you've got your own roses that you can use, and then this kind of all comes through, it's just another unexpected cost on top of it, right? Like, that must have been quite hard, because you're thinking, oh, I can use the garden roses in the store, and then they all get wiped out again, which is, full on.
That was the thing. And I guess, you know, it's so tricky because, I mean, I tend not to focus too deeply on to this side of things, but, you know, it is really challenging because, you know, the years that we had COVID, we had pretty good weather, and we had paddocks and paddocks of flowers that just went to waste because we had no one to sell them to. And then, you know, the weather's good and we've got the shop, and then the storm not wiped them all out and we had none. So yeah, it's kind of, it's been a difficult time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you keep picking yourself back up and diversifying, you know, because this is a lot to have happened, COVID and then to have the hailstorm. And I know we were talking earlier and you said just how significant the damage is. Do you want to run us through that? Because I think, you know, to me in my mind, I'm like, hail, you know, like I don't understand. I don't really understand how that, like what it can do to rose plants. You just want to run us through that quickly and then we'll go back to that other question, because I'm always really great at throwing like four questions at people at once.
Don't worry. I don't even know if I'm answering all the questions. I certainly did not know this pre the hailstorm happening, but hail can be different. And the hail that we had, it was really localized to our area, and the hail was jagged, and so it wasn't a round ball that fell. And so what it has done is scraped down the canes of the roses, and it's left open wounds on a lot of the plants, and you know, even just like sort of scratched down towards the base. So when we were, after the storm happened, we went through and we cleaned up everything. We deadheaded. We cut anything out that was too broken. A lot of the hail hit and just snapped canes in half. So that was sort of had left really sort of messy areas. We ran around and we did all of that and cleaned it up, but it was still not really possible to assess the full amount of damage because there was still, you know, leaves on some of the plants and that kind of thing. But when we went around to prune in the wintertime, that was really the amount of damage that was out there was unbelievable. Like just every single plant has been hit. And some plants weren't as bad as others, and some, you know, some were sort of okay-ish, but we had lost so much money because of COVID, because of the storm. And we really are just like treading water through it all. And so I sold a fair few plants as well just to try and recoup some costs. And I sold everything that was kind of good that we could. But yeah, the damage is definitely long term, and it's going to take years to recover, because if I sort of went through and cut everything out that was not good, then there wouldn't be very much left out there.
Yeah, crazy. Just a really nice story about one of your roses that you sold. You may or may not know this. I think Denison Green, farmer. I don't know which rose they brought, but they told me they brought some of your roses and they traveled down. Yeah, that's it. And they were roses that she had used for years previously, or she had a really crazy connection with them. And I was like, oh, wow, that's so beautiful that you've brought them and they're continuing on and you used to use them years ago. I think, you know, that's so nice. Yeah.
I think I only sold the roses to people who were flower farmers. So that was just the only thing that I really wanted to make sure that they still stayed within the industry. And I think that, you know, my plan when I took on the business was for that. And I still want to do that. I guess it's just like right now we're in a bit of a survival mode of just keeping our business afloat so that then we can continue to do that. So, you know, giving people also the opportunity to buy established plants like that is great, because you don't sort of have that build-up time. Yes, you'll have like some transport and transplant changes, but they'll be able to cut flowers and make money from them. So
yeah, amazing. So yeah. How do you, knowing that you've kind of got this hail damage and that to contend with, how do you keep going? Like what is inspiring you to keep going and to get up every day?
Oh my God. I don't know. I guess I I really love what I do. I really love flowers, and I can't imagine doing something else. But I always try to be optimistic. Like, there has been so many hard things, and it has been really hard. Like, I can't. People say, like, oh, this is really hard, and I'm just like, well, there's lots of things that are hard, but it has been very hard. Like, it's been really stressful, and it has felt like, you know, we sort of can't catch a break in, you know, lots of ways. But I really believe in locally grown flowers, and I really believe that seasonal flowers and locally grown, it's really important to our industry. And
you love what you do, and that makes you keep going, which is... That's great. So what is important to you about locally grown and seasonal flowers? What is it that you want people to know about that?
I want people to support the industry that they're in. So I guess, you know, buying locally grown and seasonal flowers, they're the best. Like, it's like buying a peach when it's in season. It tastes so much better than when it's been sitting in a cool room for a long time. Like, you know, they're so beautiful, and it's that magic of nature that is so special about flowers. You know, it's like so many people contact me and they say, oh, I had a fair bianca in my bouquet for my wedding, and every time I see the fair bianca, I just think of that, or think of the smell, or, you know, that nostalgic feeling that people get from flowers that sometimes they don't even know that they have it. But I think that that's so special, and I think it's something that brings people joy, and it's actually not a big thing. It's that small, really special thing. That's really nice.
Yeah. Be able to sell good product is to be able to understand where they're going to be used.
An understanding or a knowledge of it is really important. I do think that, you know, flower farming and forestry are two very different things, but having an understanding of both, when you work, they're both in the same industry, they're both a part of the same world, and so understanding both is really important. I think it's really important for florists to understand where their flowers come from, how they're grown, what goes into it, to really appreciate how they use those flowers, pay for those flowers, work with those flowers. And I also think on the other side, it is really important for farmers to know how the flowers are being used by florists. And, you know, there's such a huge difference even between selling a bucket of roses for a shop compared to selling a bucket of roses for a wedding that I know.
Oh, yeah, completely.
And I know that on Saturday it's going to be 40 degrees and maybe it's going to be 39 degrees on Friday, and that florist doesn't have a cool room. So I know that maybe I need to pick those a little bit tighter on the Wednesday morning or whatever it may be. I think there is lots of nuance in that. And I really do believe that, you know, no one's making millions of dollars. And I place a lot of importance on florists getting the most from every bucket of flowers that I sell to them. So, you know, I want them to be able to use all of those flowers that they pay for. I don't want to send them something that they might use half the bucket and, you know, they're losing money from that. And I think it's really, really important that is something that is respected by growers as well.
How do you think that newer growers coming into the industry would get this sort of feedback? Do you think it, I don't know, like going to work on an established flower farm for 6 months or like doing work experience somewhere, do you think that that would be helpful?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think just before I was a florist and I had limited experience on what it was like to farm flowers. I mean, I grew up in the country. I have been around farms my whole life in various different ways. But, and But you don't necessarily think too deeply unless you actually see it yourself. Mm. And I think once I made the jump into being a farmer from being a florist, it changed my perspective so much on the amount of work that goes into it. But I knew it was going to be a lot of work when I started being a farmer, but it is like, you know, when the flowers are flowering, I'm picking 7 days a week. I'm picking every single morning. I am often picking at nighttime to fill orders. And then throughout the day, you have a whole schedule of things that need to be done, as well as getting flowers to the florist as well. So
yeah,
it is lots of balls to juggle, and it's all manual labor basically. So
yeah,
I think it's like everything. It's until you see it, you don't really know. But again, I don't know if people need to necessarily be, you know, well versed in every single aspect of farming or floristry, but having a good sense of what goes into it, I think, is really important. But I think there's something very valuable in working together. Like, you know I have quite close relationships with some of my florists, and they are all different. They all do different things and they use flowers in different ways, but we communicate really well, and I understand sort of how I would maybe need to pick their flowers, or how long I need to pick their flowers, or at what point is perfect for the style that they're using. And that way I'm doing a good job for them, and then they are getting the best out of the flowers as well. And so, and that's a mutual respect that goes both ways.
Yeah.
And then you're both doing a good job. A small thing, like, and I think it's been really interesting for me having the shop now and then dealing with other growers myself, and, you know, having smaller growers sort of approach me to sell their flowers in the shop. And I think that that's really great, because I feel like having that one-on-one with people who are starting out growing is so valuable for me to sort of say, like, well, the stems actually need to be a little bit longer, or you probably need to pick this a little bit tighter because we need it for a bouquet, or whatever it is. Mm. And if you've never been in the industry before, that can be the first time that you're kind of hearing that, rather than reading it just online. Or and I think, like, that, you know, it's like what you're doing is so valuable for connecting people together, so then there's just more education out there.
Yeah, completely. Okay, what have you seen change in the industry over, like, since you've had so, and even in the last 5 years, or what's changed, do you think?
I guess it's a bit of a hard one, because I feel like COVID's really changed everything for everyone a bit. The market's definitely changed. Like, I think a lot of people aren't sort of attending the flower market like they were. And
why do you think that is?
I mean, I don't know if this is a bit of a controversial one to say or not, but it's quite unsustainable for you as a florist to go in, you know, the early hours of the night and then have to work the entire next day. Like, I personally have to leave home at 1:30 on a Thursday morning to get to the market, to then go to the shop, to pack up, set up the shop, come home, take my kids to school, go back to work, don't go to sleep until that following night. Like, you know, it's a lot of that. And then if you can't personally go to the shop, you need go to the market, you need to pay somebody, and you need to be able to afford to pay somebody. And I think, yeah, not just from a tiredness point, but, you know, for sustainability for a business, like, you know, it's expensive to pay people to go to the market in, at the early hour of the morning. And so I think a lot of people are going to wholesalers, which is also great. Like, I think it's just sort of changed the dynamic a little.
Do you think that smaller flower farmers have changed this as well over the last sort of 5 years? I feel like there's been a lot more pop-up who are willing to deliver to florists. And
yeah.
That sort of changes things a little bit.
Yeah, I think that it definitely does. And I think that that's really exciting. Like, I think that that can kind of, that can really change how it makes floristry sustainable as a as an income and a living for florists. Yeah, that's really a good thing.
And also switching back to Soho, how do you keep a business like Soho being sustainable? Because I think we've seen natural disasters now. We've seen the rise in kind of fertilizers and other inputs. How as farmers do you think you keep being sustainable, but also, I don't know, prices not getting too crazy and out of hand as well, so that people can keep affording to buy locally grown flowers?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really big one. And I think, I don't know if anyone has the answer for it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think it is really difficult. Last year I didn't put my prices up, mainly because my customers are weddings and events florists, and a lot of them weren't able to increase their prices because they were quotes from COVID time.
Mm.
So as much as I needed to put up my prices for various reasons to recoup my own costs, it was also not really feasible for some of my customers to be able to pay that extra either. So I think it's a really, the price of flowers has definitely gone up, and rightly so. And I think that it needs to go up as well. I think it's communication to people. I think it's communicating to people what goes into it, and people having more of an understanding of what goes into locally grown flowers and growing them here on a local basis. I guess the fact that some of the imports are really expensive right now because of the freight is not the worst thing in the world. Locally grown flowers. Yeah, I think I will have to put my prices up next season for whatever we have available, because otherwise we won't be able to keep going, because we do have to be realistic about the losses that we've had and how we keep going as a farm. So I think it is a lot of it's education, I guess, like everything. But that was sort of one of the reasons also too why we opened the shop, because I do get quite a few people contact me around Valentine's Day, because we have Rose Farm in our name, and so often journalists will just Google Rose Farms and try to get quotes from Rose Farms for Valentine's Day stories. And I had a call from a lady at The Guardian the year that we did the pop-up, and I was talking to her, and it was a bit of a light bulb moment, because I was saying to her, like, people should buy locally grown and they should buy seasonal flowers. And then she sort of said she didn't know what even was locally grown or what was seasonal. And then I was like, we should open a shop that just has locally grown and seasonal flowers. And then that way our customers will just learn what's in season, and and we can talk to them about it. And I think that honestly is just the only way that you can do it. Like, it's just communicating that to people who buy flowers. And then that has a flow on effect to everybody.
Yeah. And I think when you chat about locally grown flowers to people who are buying them, they then understand the costs behind them, because you can sort of say, well, this came from a farmer down the road, and you sort of talk about their farm, and they're willing to pay more because they know where they've come from. It's like when you go and buy a steak, you know, from an organic shop, you're willing to pay that little bit more because you know where the farm is, you know where that meat's come from. Same with vegetables. So I think if we kind of build this into our industry, this really like education based chatting to people, talking, communicating, then, you know, we will end up having people who want to pay that bit more.
Yeah. I mean, I think that. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you think that too.
Yeah, I do. Honestly, you can't shut me out when I'm like, people come into my shop. Sometimes I think they're just like, oh, please, please be quiet.
Definitely not. I think that's the same. I can really you know, I feel like half the time that I'm in my shop, all I'm doing is just talking to people about it. But people do really, they are interested and they do want to know. And, you know, you can't know everything about everything. Like, you know, there's a lot of people who don't work in the flower industry and they sort of buy flowers for special occasions. And, you know, they might come in just that one day and then you happen to be there and then you have that conversation with them. And that's just another person who has a little bit more perspective about it. And I think, you know, I understand that there are reasons why people don't buy locally grown and seasonal. And I understand that there can't be time. There's times when you just can't do that. I am so realistic about that. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of demand for flowers and sometimes Australian growers just can't keep up with that demand as well. So, you know, yeah. It's not that I think everyone should be doing locally grown and seasonal. I think it's just, it's more about the message and the conversation and it's more about just creating more awareness so that people can make more informed choices. Yeah. And it just creates a more sustainable living for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what has been your biggest learning curve?
Oh my gosh.
Just on the farm, I think. Just on the farm.
On the farm. I understand about the weather. Like, I don't know if I've had to learn to let the weather go, because I feel like even going into it, I know I'm married to a farmer. Like, I get the weather. So I feel like.
Yeah, farmers love a chat about the weather.
Yeah. I love a chat about the weather. I accept the weather. I think the hardest part for us with the storm that happened was that it was on the back of COVID. I think if the storm had have happened and we hadn't have had 2 years of COVID, I think I would have been able to cope with it much better and just ride that wave out. But I think it was just on the back of two really hard years that it was really hard to kind of come back from. But I think the biggest learning curve I've had is learning about pests and diseases and learning how on top of that I need to be. If you aren't across all of those things, things can turn very, very quickly. And I think that has been the thing that I've learned the most. You know, things like thrip and wheat or their canola and, you know, all the bugs that were living in those plants just come straight to my roses. It's going to happen and be on the front foot for that kind of stuff, I think, has probably been the thing that I've had to learn and be on top of the most. And maybe my first year, I probably wasn't on top of it enough. And I learned the hard way, which was probably a good thing too. Because now I know the breeding cycles of the two different types of thrip and when, I'm like a mad woman out there.
So what has been your biggest achievement?
I think my biggest achievement is that we're still going.
Yeah.
I think that I've been able to, you know, my sister works for me and she's amazing. And pre-COVID, a month before COVID, I had actually talked her out of leaving her full-time job that she'd had for 8 years in the city and coming and working for me. And then a month later, COVID happened. so that was terrible timing. But I've, you know, she's now our manager of the shop and we get to work together every day, and that's really great. And I think having kept our business afloat and just evolving and doing what we've had to do, I think is probably what I'm most proud of through or even through the hard times.
Yeah, you should be really proud of it, because gosh, it's been so hard, and especially when you're just establishing a business as well, it's even harder. So is there anything that you've ever done on the farm and regretted it, like, immediately, you know, when you were first starting out? Is there something that you sprayed, or is there something you cut too hard back? Is there something that you've done like that?
There's probably been a few times that I think definitely that first year, it's all so new, and, you know, it doesn't matter. Claire and Wally could have given me, and they did, they were incredible. They were so helpful. And I just I'm so grateful for their support that they gave me in the early days. But, you know, some of the things that they used on their sandy soil just can't be used on our clay soil here.
Okay.
And so there's many things that we tried to sort of replicate that they did. And we had one flush that was just yellow leaves that all ended up shriveling up and dying. And that was particularly horrible. But, you know, we learned not to ever use that again, and we would never use that again. And so I think, yeah, there's definitely been things that we've tried and absolutely found out the hard way that we shouldn't. But, you know, I think the thing with farming is, and I guess maybe I'm probably more understanding about this because of the family that I'm in, but, you know, you can't get it right every time. And until you try it, you kind of don't know. Like, and every climate and every paddock and pockets of different paddocks can all be so different. So you just have to give it a go. Like when I was growing flowers pre-Soho out the side of our house here, I had no idea really. And Mel and I bought a whole heap of seeds from diggers and we were like, oh, we'll just plant them. And then I started researching and I started reading about when to do this and what not to do. And you know, and that information was all really good, but you can go into such a rabbit hole, like, of what to do, and everyone does something slightly different. And my friend Lindsay said to me, just put the seeds in the ground. And actually that was the best advice that anyone gave me, because until you plant it and find out, you don't know. Like, you know, it might just not really do very well there or in your soil or whatever. So yeah, I think you've got to make mistakes to learn the things that you need to as well.
Yeah. And in this sort of like making mistakes and seeing things change and talking about locally grown and seasonal flowers, are there any changes you would like to see happen to support the growth of our flower industry?
I'd like to see more people communicating to their customers about the importance of supporting locally grown and seasonal. I think that would be really good. I think it would be really nice for there to be a little bit more transparency in that too, rather than sort of saying that we have seasonal flowers but only having, you know, a small selection of seasonal flowers or locally grown flowers.
And where is Soho going this season?
This season we're going to have to take it a little bit slower. The beauty of the storm was that I was able to sort of find some other revenue streams for us, selling petals and doing some other sort of bits and pieces, which will keep us going and help us to sort of recover, I guess. I won't be able to pick from the plants like I have in the past few seasons because they just need to grow back. So we will be taking a bit slower. There'll still be roses. I probably just won't be selling the quantity that I was, but they'll be back. It's a long game.
And how do you sell your roses now? Are you still selling through the market, or you just sell to the florist that you have on your books?
No, I still sell everything through the market. I find that the best way for me to do it. I mean, it's really hard. You're so busy throughout the day. And I guess I think Mick said this in his podcast with you that it's actually really good just being able to take them to a central point and everyone picks them up from there. And that works. Like, that really works, because you're doing so many things throughout the day that sort of in COVID I did have people sort of coming direct to the farm and picking up, but I'd have to set certain times that people could come and do that, because you're just sort of here, there and everywhere. And especially like on the farm and in the summertime when it's hot, you're working to so many deadlines. Like, we only have a certain window of time that we can pick, and then you only have a certain window of time that, you know, it's not too hot in the shed to process and that kind of thing. So I find having a central location to drop everything and that works the best for me.
Yeah, I can definitely see that now, having been on doing some time on a flower farm, just seeing those like small windows of picking times, and also you are just so busy through the whole day that when people stop, when you have to stop start, it's really hard to get anything done. So I can completely understand that.
Also, as a on the florist side of things, it is also really great having everything in one central point for you to buy everything as well. Like, I do pick up from people's farms here and there, but
it's hard.
One thing that I'm really conscious of is smaller growers valuing their time. Like, I hear about smaller growers who are not accounting for that time that you take out of your day when people are coming and picking up, and I think that's not it's not setting a good precedent for everybody else in the industry too, because that your time is valuable, and whether you're a big grower or a small grower, it's a different sort of time, but it's all still really important. So
yeah. If you had to leave the farm quickly, what three things would you take?
Oh my gosh. I've been trying to think of this, and I take Mr. Lincoln, all my Mr. Lincolns. I would take my heritage roses too. I love them. Yeah. And I would take all my clematis. So I'm going somewhere that's got some room. I love the clematis.
It's so beautiful. And I just wanted to ask really quickly on the clematis, what else do you grow? You grow sweet peas and a few dahlias? Is that right?
Yeah, and we have some lupins.
Lupins, that's right. Oh, I love your lupins. Yeah,
you do love lupins.
Yeah, I do love the lupins.
I mean, this season coming, I haven't planted anything extra. Just because of time and no staff, that kind of thing. And also, I guess I've just tried to sort of take it easy on myself, lower the pressure and expectations a little bit, so I can keep going. But we've grown lots of different things over the years. We've had phlox and cosmos and zinnias and, you know, all sorts of stuff. So,
lovely.
I mean, I'd love to get back to doing that, and hopefully we will. But, it'll just take a little bit more time, I think, for us from here.
Yeah, great. And what is your favourite flower memory?
I think having when my friends who are florists come to visit the farm, that's my favourite time. Like, when my flower friends come to visit and we can, like, walk around and ogle the flowers together, I love that.
Yeah.
Because they love them as much as I love them. And, that's my favourite time.
Yeah, great. Fills your bucket.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Lovely. And is there anything I haven't asked you about your shop or about Soho that you wanted to share and really get across?
I feel pretty good about the industry. I feel like we've got some really great people who are doing really exciting things and are really passionate about it, and that's exciting. And hopefully after all this rain.
Yeah, I know, go away already.
Yeah, I feel like we've got some really great voices who are helping to educate people and make our industry more sustainable. So not necessarily anything about me. I feel like it's everybody as a whole, really.
Is there anyone that you really want people to know about that people don't know about?
Really am excited about what Lorelei's doing with the dahlias and how passionate she is about her breeding. And I buy a lot of her dahlias when she has her growing season, and they are always so beautiful. Like, just her attention to detail and how the pride that she takes in every single bucket that goes out is just incredible. I think she's a really good grower, and I think that she takes her job
very seriously and really well. So
I think that what you're doing is amazing, and how you've kind of picked yourself up and gone for it, and now you've got the shop and you're always doing something new and inspiring. So thank you so much again, Christy, for being part of Dish the Dirt. That is a wrap for 2022. Thank you again to everyone who has been part of this Dish the Dirt podcast, whatever it is. It's this big beast that kind of just keeps rolling along, and I love it. So I can't wait to bring you more in 2023. If you would like to be part of the podcast, please don't be shy. Put up your hand and send me an email at dishthedirtpodcast@gmail.com, and I will do my best to get back to you within a timely manner. Sometimes it takes me a while, but I do get there. So thank you so much to everyone who always sends me messages and support. It's wonderful. If you would like to leave a review, you can do so via Apple Podcasts. But until 2023, I hope that everyone is safe. I hope that everyone has an absolutely wonderful Christmas with their friends and families and loved ones, and that all the flowers keep doing all the right things for you. Until then, keep being blooming fabulous.